buzzwords for this whole endeavor for the last several months in Nebraska is bold and moderate. Those two words keep coming up. Yet we're looking at the property tax, something that passed way back to the Middle Ages when we had the ante up for the king.
Before then.
Before then. Sales tax, we know we at least had a version of that with the Boston Tea Party. Income tax is almost 100 years old in its present form. So not much modern about any of those things. Are there anything in your study of the tax world or how you would design a tax system that strike you as something that is out there that is being hatched that is bold and modern, or are we just using words?
For one tax that a couple states use, in most European countries, most countries other than the United States use, it's a value-added tax. Some places have used that as a replacement for the corporate tax. And essentially, Ohio did a gross receipts tax, but Michigan has an income tax and a modified gross receipts tax, which is sort of like corporate income tax, like it's like a value-added tax. And New Hampshire has both the corporate tax and a value-added tax. They're the only two states that do. But that's a way of taxing consumption without having to collect it on each sale at the retail level. So it's one direction that people have been talking about. It's not on a smaller scale, we have gas tax, but with the increased efficiency of cars and variability of efficiency, that's not working really well. So some states have been talking about vehicle miles travel tax. Oregon, in fact, is trying to do an experiment with that, beginning to implement with volunteers. And there's been some studies, some experiments with it. But that's new. It would be a replacement for the motor fuel tax.
If we were just to advocate and say, here, design a modern toll tax system for us, if you guys have been around long enough to figure it out, what big changes would you make to what we have now? And then jump up at you and say, gee, this is what we change.
No. Adding more services to the sales tax base, limiting some of the potential exemptions. It's not bold, but it's
what about if you apply the sales tax to the interest?
I just heard a bank of
in the business cycle
turns down and you have less revenues, that usually isn't a very good time to go out and try and raise taxes, is it?
Thank you, Senator Hadley. So we've been talking about the downturn of the economy a little bit. When the banks went bad, we stress tested them. Is there a way to create a stress test, or are you aware of any modeling for stress testing budgets, state budgets out there?
That's really out of my field. People have, one way of looking at it is to look at what if there's a structural deficit. So you take revenue and say, okay, if trends continue, here's the kind of revenue that we're going to get with the economy. And you do the same thing for expenditures. And say, if we maintain the same level of service, so expenditures per student, here's what's happening to the student bodies, and this is what's going to happen to education spending. This is what's going to happen to enrollment in the universities. And this is this is the trend, if we fund it, to higher education. Same way with all the other kind of services, population growth, elderly services, crimes, and you do a projection. Is the growth in revenue given the current tax system going to match the expenditure needs given our current service level? And you create that kind of tax expenditure, that tax and expenditure forecast. And that's one way of doing it. I'm not sure what a stress test would be other than that.
And another question is completely unrelated. LLCs have become a very popular forming for businesses. Should we treat, and it's been kind of ignored, and tell me why, should we treat LLCs differently than we do individual tax income or individual taxes? Is there a reason for doing that?
You're taxing the income of LLCs as personal income.
Personal income, yeah.
Right. So you're not taxing as corporate.
So both, but your deductions are different, so we already treat them a little bit differently. Do we want, is there a public policy reason to encourage LLCs, or do we want to treat them differently than an individual income tax, or even, obviously, we treat them very similar to a C-Corp, as far as the rate right now?
If I had my druthers, what I would do is tax businesses as business, whether it's a corporation or a non-corporation, and tax them the same, and eliminate the corporate income tax. So that's sort of the direction that I would go.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciated your comments about expenditures, and Dr. Wallace, two different times you talked about that as well. And this is a revenue discussion. However, as Senator Hadley said, we're not in an environment where anybody wants to see taxes go higher and want them lower. But should our discussion and deliberation include, because why do you have taxes if not to fund your basic public services? And so does that need to be an important part of this discussion? Is that, what are our priorities in terms of funding, and what's the basic amount that we need to fund those services?
I think that the point that you just made too about talking about stress testing the budget and Dave's notion of the structural deficit fits into that very, very much. And from a policy perspective, we always say expenditures come first and revenues come second. So if you had your druthers for a couple things, that would be one of my druthers, is that you would talk about both of those.
But the typical tax reform commission is usually driven by some kind of structural changes that are revenue neutral. That you're not in the business of cutting taxes, you're not in the business of raising taxes. That's another body. It's the typical approach. There's no reason why you can't have a committee that says, what should our level of expenditures be? And how should we fund it? You could have that kind of commission as well. But it's a different kind of commission.
Then you'd be bold.
With that, I'll ask Senator Shoemaker.
One of the things that seems to keep coming up in this discussion is kind of a counterweight to economic fluctuations, tax fluctuation, is the rainy day fund. And is there a good rule of thumb as to how much should be in a rainy day fund, if you give them a little bit of a concern?
Yeah, budget people have adopted certain benchmarks, guidelines. But it really depends on the state and the tax structure. How much does it fluctuate? And if you've got a state, Nebraska didn't get hammered quite as hard as other states in the Great Recession. So you don't have to worry quite much as other states. So there's that component. And then there's the part of it is, how much security do you want? Do you want to be able to cover any kind of potential deficit? So there's a 1 in 100 chance that you would lose 20% of your revenues next year. Do you want a rainy day fund that would cover all of them? Or do you want to cover the chance of a 1 in 10 shot of a 5% recovery? So all of that goes into deciding what the size of the rainy day fund should be. So what you'd want to do is sort of look at pattern of revenues historically, some sense about what they might do in the future, structural changes in the economy or the tax structure. Figure out, well, what's the kind of dip in revenue that we could expect? For how long will that last? How much of that do we want to make up? And how much of it are we going to cover by cutting taxes or cutting expenditures?
I think it would be interesting now to go to a tax reform Georgia style to see what Georgia has done, because maybe we might find that bold and moderate. I mean, bold and moderate. I'm going to be in Atlanta on Friday, so I'll check this stuff out now.
Okay, in 2010, in the legislative session in the spring, they adopted a special counsel on tax reform and fairness for Georgia. It said they conducted a thorough study of the tax structure for the state and reported back by January 10th. They appointed 11 members and named 4 economists by name in the bill. I was one of them, 4 academic economists. They listed the governor, and then there was head of the Georgia Chamber, head of the Small Business Association, and 2 people appointed by the lieutenant governor, and 2 by the speaker. So there were 4 economists, the governor, and everybody else was a business person. So the governor didn't come. So it was basically academics and business. We were to report to a special committee, joint committee of the General Assembly. They were to take our recommendations and write legislation, the law said, without significant changes, and implement our recommendations, and then vote it up or down. Well, you thought about, my God, my recommendations are going to become possibly law. Got to observe this.
Scary, huh?
And it's one thing to preach in front of a classroom, it's another to say, this is what we have to do. Well, then we quickly realized that what they would do was vote it down and piece together whatever they wanted to do in the first place. So what we did, we did a study. We have 4 months from the time we met. We have 1 tax accountant, me, who was running the Fiscal Research Center and did lots of studies on tax policy in the state, anticipating for a while that there'd be a revenue study. But we didn't anticipate all the recommendations, so we didn't have research. So for the biggest one, it came up at the very end. We couldn't analyze it. It got passed, and then all hell broke loose. So we looked at the structure. We said increase the cigarette tax. Cancer Society wants to increase it by $1. This 68 cents is the average for the surrounding states. Index the motor fuel tax to inflation. We have an insurance premium tax, which is a gross receipts tax, highest in the country. Discourages insurance companies from locating in the state. So we thought we should reduce that from 4.5% to 1.7%, 75%. It's actually in Georgia, it's local as well as a state tax. And part of the issue was who's going to bear the burden of the lost revenue. Communications, telephone, and so forth, we modeled legislation after North Carolina. So take away the franchise taxes, take away the current sales taxes, and go to a 7% communication service tax. Corporate tax, maintain parity with personal income tax, eliminate all the credits, sunset the development credits, sunset all the other credits, and create two new credits, which would be appropriations. You'd appropriate X millions of dollars every year, and a committee would decide how to spend it. What businesses are going to get these credits? Hopefully, in an unpolitical way. Good luck. Sales tax. We said we're going to eliminate lots of the exemptions. Recommended eliminating exemptions. See the list. No sales tax holidays, no food exemption. Casual sales, currently if you, till then, if you sold an automobile to a friend, they didn't charge sales tax on it. That was being abused. So retain some exemptions, the business exemptions, the government exemptions. Add an exemption for energy. Fix the agriculture exemption, which was a host of dozens of exemptions and pieces. Captured almost all agricultural purchases, but not quite. Manufacturing exemption, technical change, and then sunset all the other exemptions, including, we'll see, some pretty sensitive ones. Add services, so tax household services, personal services, repair services, membership, AAA, health clubs, and so forth. In an earlier version of this, many years ago, we were going through this list of organizations going tax this, and they got the gun clubs. And this is Georgia. Next, move on. Vehicle maintenance services. On e-commerce, we recommended not adopting an Amazon law, which would use affiliates in the state as a basis for Nexus to capture, requiring out-of-state businesses to collect the sales tax. We said there's too much that's fraught with legal. That's going to get decided. We don't do it. Personal income tax. This is the big thing that came up at the very end. Huge change. Eliminate the retirement exclusion because that was going to cost us a bunch. It was unfair. Sunset all the credits. Convert to a flat tax. Eliminate all the exemptions, all the deductions, standard, itemized. Adopt a $2,000 per dependent exemption, which is reduction from there. Lower the rate from what is currently 6%, graduated rate up to 6%, lower that to 4%, add a new credit that would hold harmless any low income person that was took the standard deduction. So anybody at, who was paying less than 6% at the margin, they were helped protected. That came up at the very end. It was thought that we're going to lower the rate from 6 to 4. That's going to be a huge revenue loss. And so we're going to phase that in. And we didn't have time to really look at that until a couple days before the report was finalized. I was running back and forth of numbers. And I kept coming up with huge revenue increases. I didn't have a database to do a real analysis. And I kept going back. And so finally I called the chair and said, I'm coming up with huge, huge revenues. So no, that can't be right. And so we didn't put that in the report that this was going to be a revenue range, but it was, and caused harm. It was also the case that this had major effects on income tax incidents. This is what the current system looked like. Very low rates. This is the 21 here is deciles, right now, percentiles, five percentile units. And then at the very end is the top 1%. So this is basically the distribution. Every one of these categories has an equal number of taxpayers in it. So that's what the Reform Council, when we started looking at it, that's what happened. At the very bottom, because of the credit, there was no change in the tax. In fact, a little bit of reduction. Then, for anybody above about $10,000 up to about $130,000 had a large increase in taxes. Tax cuts went to the very, very wealthy. And when I finally was able to do this and I showed it to the chair of Ways and Means, he said, that's not good. and they set about trying to fix it. So, this is what occurred, so the politics of this. So, this is what, this was in the newspaper. Democrats said the bill is going to raise income taxes for those who earn between $20,000 and $180,000. That's the graph I just showed you. Grover Norquist said this is going to be a big tax increase. He wasn't sure he would support the Tea Party patriots were opposed to it. The Georgia Baptist Convention said no to it. Sales tax exemption. Retirees said no tax on food. Girl Scout cookies. Boy Scout cookies. We said let's sunset those, but essentially let's look at these and say, do you want them or not? Make the General Assembly decide whether it want to keep those. Well, Girl Scout cookie people came to the governor's office and gave them cookies. Business owners said, you know, haircut is something that's a repeat service. People come in every 4 to 6 weeks, so it would add up. So I don't think it would hurt us in the long run, so don't tax haircuts. So opposition to all of these things. I don't feel good about it. Automobile repair. Animal hospital, they didn't like this. We treat lots of abandoned pets, so we shouldn't be taxed. So what happened, a lot of this went by the wayside, so the 2011, so we gave them a report, first of the year, they had some hearings, they developed their own proposal. They were going to add a sales tax on casual sales, exempt energy, tax some services, maintenance, repairs, and insulation, adopt the communications tax policy, fix the ag exemption, fix the manufacturing exemption, change the personal exemption. They capped the retirement, they eliminated the standard deduction and non-dependent exemptions, they capped the itemized deductions and phased them out. They replaced the dependent exemption that was phased out, and they lowered the rate 4.6% and then 4.55%. And a new credit to hold low-income people harmless. We did analysis of this, and we did probably two different versions, or three different versions of this proposal every day in 3 weeks or 4 weeks as they tried to tinker with it to get it so that not so many people have tax increase. Well, this again is this is the Tax Reform Committee's proposal. This is what the legislator came up with. So it reduced taxes on average for lots of people, basically held rich on average, the same rate. So this was a big tax cut. But the rate structure, you see the kinks, it goes down at the upper end and goes up again. This didn't go over. And what happened was, towards the end of the session, the last week, this was coming up for a vote in the committee, and the Democratic minority leader of the House came in and said, this is going to be aggressive, lots of people are going to have tax increases, and the Speaker just said, we're not going to vote on this, and blamed us for the announcements. So I got blamed for the
That's us right here.
Or the credit. So,
I get an Africa this whole time. It's out of the country.
Actually, when I was asked to be on a committee, I said, no, I'd rather be the director of the research group. And actually, they wound up making it both. What they did do, though, the following year was very little. They increased the personal exemption by 1,000 for married. They capped the retirement exclusion because that was going to cost the state bukus of money. They taxed casual sales of motor vehicles. They adopted the energy exemption, they fixed the ag exemption, they fixed the manufacturing exemption. So it didn't do much. Lessons, this was being done during the political campaign. The governor was running for re-election, the entire General Assembly, the legislature was running. We didn't have a public meeting where we talked about any of these ideas. It was all in meetings that weren't subject 5 months was too short. We came up, we were able to do the analysis on some of the reports. And it wasn't a balanced committee. It was business types, no political sense, that didn't understand the tax structure. And we were educating them in a 4 month period we started to do. They were smart, hard-working people, but still, it was difficult. We didn't have time to sell this to the General Assembly to explain the reason, try to explain to the public what we were trying to do. That we weren't arguing that we should eliminate girl exemption for Girl Scout cookies, only that ought to be looked at, and we didn't have time to do it. But we got hammered, you know, political naivety. That's the story of Georgia.
The real encouraging.
Not encouraging.
Yeah, aren't you glad to have us here?
Economic theory may be one thing, and political theory may be another.
I completely like that question.
You want
to make the difference. Are there questions for our... yes.
Chairman Hadley, I just looking at your last slide, it looks eerily familiar.
Yes.
And my question would be, this was something that we had discussed, actually, those who were working on the original concept of the commission, of making it a two-year commission instead of a one-year commission or a six-month commission, so to speak, to give us more time to be able to dig into more analysis and to try to take, in theory, some of the political dynamic out of it, in the sense of the transition of an executive branch, transition of new legislators coming in and leaving. Is that something that, granted, we have a mission that is laid out before us for the LR-155 to pass, but is that something that we should take into consideration moving forward, that it's probably better to maybe better to take more time and do it right instead of trying to rush something to throw out a variety of different proposals that may or may not pass because of change in state leadership and a change in the legislature because of our legislative term limits?
Yeah, partly it's, I don't know the political soul here, but yeah, I think you're right. If you were to say, these are the kinds of things that you want to move towards, you want to seriously consider adding services to the sales tax base, so what do we do? Which ones would make sense? We want to tinker with the rates for the corporate tax, for the personal income tax. But we're not sure what rates are the best. We want to do some analysis. We want to try to sell those ideas to the public to understand the kind of direction that this commission thinks we ought to stay out of the movement. That makes a lot of sense.
I think also...
And then also, I don't think you can adopt these kind of changes wholesale. The idea of crafting a 300-page bill that included all those ideas that we had, trying to pass that one fell swoop is politically suicide.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, it's easy for us to sit here and say, take your time and think about it, but one of the frustrations I think Dave had with the Georgia study is it wasn't clear-cut what they were trying to do. They didn't take the time to think through it, and as we've been talking today, this notion about lowering the rates and broadening the base and why is that good, you want to understand how important that is in your system. The fact that you don't tax an awful lot of services, well, what does it cost you, and is it worth fighting the political battle to put them in? And maybe you have that information already, but maybe you don't.
If I heard you right, what occurred in Georgia was that you eliminated all economic development credits and replaced that with decisions by committee. Is that right?
That was the recommendation. That
sounds pretty bold. Can you tell me, was that, and you've made that recommendation before to eliminate the economic development credits, is that because those ideas are outdated? Is it because you think you proposed that new model because you thought it could be more flexible in a global economy? Can you just unwrap that for me?
We didn't think the credits were very effective. One, they were small and spread across all kinds of businesses. They were complicated. I think we're basically giving away most of the money to firms that would have done the same thing and that what we, there was no cap on the amount of money that was being given away. The job tax credit, investment tax credit, film tax credit, they're entitlements. For 5 jobs, it gives you $1,000 per job for 5 years to keep them. So there's no cap, there's no budget. So the notion of, one, sort of looking at, we're going to spend this amount of money, let's make sure we spend it in the right places. So let's have a committee decide, appropriate committee decide, you know, this is how I want to spend this $50 million. This project makes sense, this one doesn't. Knowing that if you spend it on this one, you can't spend it on another one. There's a trade-off.
And maybe this question is a little out of your wheelhouse, and that's okay, but do you have recommendations for what works in a changing, dynamic global economy in terms of economic development incentives?
No.
Thank you.
I would be too far afield.
Senator Burch, you had mentioned that spending should lead the discussion, step one, of what you need before you start getting engaged in what your revenue should be. To what end, can I just ask, what was going on in Georgia that you were looking at eliminating exemptions and rounding up some cash?
The notion was to be revenue neutral.
Sorry?
The notion was to be revenue neutral. And that was the commission said, whatever we propose should be revenue neutral. What they wound up with was a proposal, however, unbeknownst to them, there was a big revenue increase. That was not the intent.
What was, since you were looking at getting rid of exemptions, which were now exempt and watching the criminal things, Cyrus Paris, then what were you going to do with the extra money to make it neutral?
Lower the income tax rate.
That was the idea that, and yeah. What was the income tax? Was it a four-tier structure like Nebraska, or three or two?
It's 5 brackets, but they're very flat, so you hit the top 6% rate at $10,000 of taxable income.
How much money are we talking about would have been raised by the exemption? I mean, I think you had...
The change.
Because you had communicated ordinarily, you know, at least, maybe you mean this only in small changes or not going to result in anything. I mean, I think your testimony or the thing I took away was that we don't know that if you lower individual income tax rates that that's going to subsequently result in any more economic development businesses moving here. But obviously Georgia must have been convinced that that would have, and so they were looking for help from you in that respect.
No. There was some... The 4% rate, I think, was driven by a presentation by somebody in the Georgia Tech, what's it called, committee, a business group, alliance, who said that we're competing, Georgia's competing with Texas for high-tech employees. And his argument was that it's hard to recruit people that would go to Texas because they don't have an income tax and Georgia did. And he thought that if Georgia lowered its rate to 4%, he'd be able to bring those people to Georgia. And business members of the committee focused on, became fixated on 4% as the rate that we're trying to get to.
Thank you for that explanation. Is it a correct economic principle that the best tax is what you pay and I don't pay? Is that generally the best economic principle that we should?
Well,
thank you so much. We appreciate you coming all the way up from Georgia. You gave us a lot of good information to deal with, and I was especially helpful to talk about what Georgia went through because it is easy to talk about it from a theoretical policy standpoint, but we do operate in a political realm, and
like it or not, right?
Like it or not, that's the way it goes. So, thank you so much.
When we got the email from Mary Jane asking if we would come to speak, and what the Sally is, do I really want to do that? And Sally says, "Oh, it'll be fun." Yeah, it was.
How much fun? tax that have been on Tanzania.